Hello, I welcome you to the June 2nd, 2020 virtual design review board meeting here in Miami Beach. I'm going to welcome everyone, and at this point, I'm going to hand off to Nick to go through his presentation. Nick?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. I'd like to advise applicants and members of the public that today's virtual meeting of the Design Review Board has been scheduled for the limited purpose of allowing applicants to obtain preliminary feedback from the board in order to further develop their plans. Each application you'll hear has been placed on the agenda for discussion purposes only and will at all times be subject to a future duly noticed quasi-judicial hearing at which full presentations will be made and the city's formal rules of procedure will apply. In other words, no formal approval may be granted at today's virtual meeting. I'll be keeping time at today's meeting. Members of the public will be given 2 minutes each to speak. Applicants will be given 10 minutes for their presentations. I'd also like to read the city's notice regarding lobbyist registration. If you're appearing on behalf of a business, a corporation, or another person, you need to register as a lobbyist with the city clerk's office. If you haven't registered yet, you should register before you speak to the board. You don't have to register as a lobbyist if you're speaking only on behalf of yourself and not any other party, or if you're testifying as an expert witness providing only scientific, technical, or other specialized information or testimony in this public meeting, or if you're appearing as a representative of a neighborhood association without any compensation or reimbursement for your appearance to express support of or opposition to any item. Expert witnesses and representatives of neighborhood associations shall, prior to appearing, disclose in writing to the city clerk their name, address, and the principal on whose behalf they are communicating. If you're an architect, attorney, or employee representing an applicant or an objector, you must register as a lobbyist. These rules apply whether you're appearing in favor of or against an item, or encouraging or arguing against its passage, defeat, modification, or continuance.
Thank you. James, you're muted.
For discussion purposes only, I'd just like to announce that we do have a quorum to hear these discussion items. The following board members are in virtual attendance: Mr. Jason Hagopian, Mr. Marsh Kriplin, Mr. Jim Bodner, and Mr. Scott Diffendorfer. So at our last meeting, the May 5th, 2020 meeting, which was also canceled due to the COVID-19 situation, we had a presentation that included four projects that were tied together by their location within the town center. At this meeting, I don't really have so much of a grand scheme tying these applications all together. I do have positive news in the sense that come July 7th, we will be having a design review board meeting that will be a hybrid combination of both the virtual meeting that we've been having, as well as the city has been able to obtain a remote physical location where members of the public can come and participate live and virtually and make presentations as well as submit exhibits. So we will be able to resume action items come July. For the following agenda that I've put together, I did pull most of the applications that were already either previously on the April, the May, or the June agenda and come up with some form of logic to what we will be discussing. I have 10 items scheduled for today, identified as six discussions items. The last discussion item is a series of the antennas, so I bunched them together, and they are five. One of the applications you have seen before and was they had been working since their May 5th presentation and wanted to just show you how much they had taken your feedback and basically wanted to do as a brief presentation. The format will be as follows. The applicant will make a presentation. We have blocked approximately 15 minutes for such presentation. If the applicant needs and the board chair so chooses, extra time can be granted. We've then allocated an additional 15 minutes to have public input. In the agenda that we submitted, I truncated that in anticipation of what I felt may garner public sentiment or comment. If, of course, we have overwhelming requests for participation, that can also be extended. And then this will be followed by approximately 15 minutes for board discussion. Again, as Mr. Kaler just mentioned, the purpose of this is to get the applications presented and fresh in your mind so that when we do resume in July, we'll be able to expedite those projects that we've previously presented by having them respond in site plan and other changes to your suggestions. The agenda that I submitted listed approximate times. Again, those are only for approximate times. The order is to be followed as reflected in what we previously sent. And with that, I'll call up the first discussion item. It's DRB file number 19-0430, 1311 15th Terrace. I believe we'll have the project architect, Mr. Richard Sierra, presenting to this board.
You're muted.
Me? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. First of all, I want to thank everyone for giving us the opportunity to discuss this project with you and get the feedback. I know it's been a particular situation with everything with COVID and that we've been dealing with. So we are really, really appreciative. So for this project, I don't know, I'm supposed to be seeing the presentation on my screen, I'm not sure. But the project that we are discussing, here we go, thank you so much. So what we see here, we are proposing a 4-unit, 3-story condo building. The main things that were informing the design for this project were we were really interested in incorporating landscape into the project. We felt it was really important to us, as well as finding different ways to engage the project with the street frontage, which is in this rendering, and I'll discuss it a little further in the following slides. But you see here how the main levels are like a breezeway at the ground level, taking into consideration the weather and keeping the project open and porous, considering potential weather events. So that would be the ground level. And then the entrance into the actual enclosure happens at the first level above ground, which is a series of terraces that allow you to enter the project. And you can go to the next slide. So here, the location of the project, we are between West Avenue to the east and Bay Road to the west. We are right across from the Oppenheim project is one of them. That's right there, the Iona Bay, and a few others that I'll show you in the following slides. You can go next. This is a survey of the actual condition. It's a project that's been divided in 7 units, 7 apartment units. Next. Here we can see the current condition. In these images, you can start seeing some of the entrances and some of these apartments. Next. So here we see it in context. Again, as I was saying before, just a block north of us, we see the Iona Bay to the left there. It kind of relates a little bit in terms of the proportions and the program of the project. Next. So this is standing on Bay Road, looking east through 15th Court Terrace, rather. And again, we actually see to our right a project that was recently completed that shares some similarity to the project that we're proposing, as well as the Iona Bay, another condo project to just north of us. Next. So here we see at ground level, as I had mentioned before, we see a series of breezeways that offer individual entry into each individual unit, effectively enclosing the required parking for each unit, which is 2 parking spots per unit as per the code. it's really important to note for this project that at this level, there is no complete air conditioned enclosure. It's completely breathable to the elements, to taking into consideration any weather events. Next. Here we see the first level above ground. At these terraces along the frontage of the property is where we see the entrance into each individual condo. And this is an open plan that is connected to the floor above. It's open to above. We can go to the next image. Here we are at the second level, which again, it's connected to the ground level. It's an open space, and we wanted to keep it as open as possible, flexible space that could lend itself for one or two bedroom configurations depending on individual user preferences. Next. And here now we have the top floor that connects us to the terrace that overlooks the street in front, 15 terrace and master bedroom area. Next. Just the roof plan, we can go on to the next image. And again, here see this would be the south elevation. We see here how the project connects grounds itself, and it takes into consideration the landscape. We've employed a series of vertical gardens with steel cables that offer a little bit of a semi-separation between units. And again, it basically erodes away a little bit of, but we wanted to make sure we didn't have a project that was a massive insulated volume. We really wanted to explore how the project could activate the streetscape. Next. This would be the west elevation. Again, we start seeing there on the south side of the property, the steel cables coming up, just letting the landscape meld in with the architecture. And then we have also balconies and open spaces towards the back of the project. Next. This would be the north elevation, the back setback of the project, north setback. Next. The east elevation, similar to the opposite end. Next. And here we see the materials. We wanted to, in terms of the materials, again, I think our main focus was landscape, definitely. We have been looking at a lot of projects around our project, namely 1111. We also looked at projects like the Baptist Hospital on Alton Road. We saw projects so beautifully have a very understated palette of just white stucco, wood cladding, and just such a sober palette allows the landscape to speak for itself and be the focus of the proposal. Next. And here we see the diagrams of what it is that we would be seeking. So we have a waiver, we're asking for a waiver of the coverage diagram. I think we are about 8% above what the limit would be, and the side setbacks. The side setbacks, we are now at 7.5 feet, whereas the code calls for 10 feet on the sides. So here, what we are trying to accomplish is really being able to shelter, having parking that is within the core of the property, within the building envelope. So this width of 60 feet overall allows us to have both workable widths for each front-facing condo unit, as well as being able to shelter parking for each individual unit. Next. Our FAR diagrams here, it's just with the hatch, it helps to see how the ground level behaves. There's a partial enclosure of the breezeways that connects us to the first level above ground. Next. Again, FAR diagram helps us see here to the right, the second level, how it's open to below, and then floor above that. Next. And here again, we have a front view of our proposal. So as I was mentioning before, it was really important to us to develop, and everyone with the team has been really helpful. We had a few meetings with James and Irina and Fernanda to discuss the different ways that we could articulate the architecture within also taking into consideration FAR requirements. So we're employing these vertical gardens. We kind of envision how, as the landscape matures, it would basically render this as almost like a covering glass volume over the front yard, open shelter, but offer shelter, but still be open and connected to the street frontage.
You have 2 minutes remaining.
I think I'm good now. I'm open to discussion.
So did that complete your presentation?
Yes, thank you.
Does anyone from the public wish to speak at this time? Going through the list. I see no one. So I'm going to end the public portion of this presentation and turn over to the board for comment. James, could you touch upon the waiver or variance I think we're talking about here?
Of course. James Murphy here. Chief of Urban Design Planning Department. Just for the record, board members, I did forward you a letter from WAVNA, the neighborhood association that is not supportive of the recommended variances. So this application is basically requesting two things from this board. One is a waiver. Waiver is something that can be granted by this board using the design review criteria and based on the merit of the design. They're also asking for a few setback reductions, which is a variance. Variants are held to a different standard and has to be reviewed as such. Basically, this project is a single and a half lot in the West Avenue district. Historically platted, as you see in my diagram in the staff memo, with 50-foot wide lots. Sometime in the development timeline, the project acquired half of the neighboring lot, which brought its width from 50 feet to 75 feet. In 2017, there was substantial changes to the RM1 and RM2 zoning district. Among them, we added the lot coverage waiver of 45% unless increased through approval by the design review board. And more importantly, we increased the setbacks. Both of those endeavors were to create a more resilient development that was able to be more sustainable in terms of its on-site water retention and lessened footprint. Basically, the increase for the setbacks were for lots that are 65 feet in width or less, the minimum setback is 7.5. For lots greater than 65 feet, whether that's 1 foot or 50 feet, that increased setback goes up to 10 feet. Upon meeting with the development team, for full disclosure, the online zoning code resource, MuniCode, had not been updated. So the architect with the development team doing their due diligence referred to the MuniCode and saw that the zoning setbacks were still 7.5 feet. As they developed their project, they met with staff. Staff corrected them, gave you the ordinance, worked towards resolution with MuniCode, and regrettably informed them that we would not be able to support their variance application. Although, if you look at the area critically, you'll see that with some of the existing buildings, whether they're the non-conforming older buildings with a less setback of 5 feet, or some of the more recent developments, as Richard mentioned, the Oppenheim building, that also has setbacks that are in alignment with their request. Again, because this is new development, staff cannot support the variances as they are just a design-driven element and therefore is recommending against those variances. Consequently, because of the variance that we are not recommending favorably for the reduced setbacks, we are also not recommending favor of the reduced lot coverage because they are intrinsically linked. But is very supportive of the design and things that, with the exception of the setbacks, you know, we really do commend the design of the building.
Thank you, James. Other board members? And Sam, welcome.
Yes, Yes, for the record, Sam Sheldon joined virtually the meeting.
Hey, everyone.
Jim, if I may suggest, unless there's some major or pressing issue that some of the board members would like to weigh in on, I think the biggest thing that would probably benefit the applicant is gauging the support for the variances. As I've explained to this board in the past, the variance requires five members to support the reduction in the code requirements versus a waiver or just pure design review, which requires four members to vote affirmative. So we do have five members in attendance. The other two members, one is not feeling well, and the other we have not yet to be able to get in touch with.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I second your comment about the quality of the design and the appropriate use of materials and so forth, but I'd want to see what impact removing the 2.5-foot setback from both sides would really have on the design. Of course, there would be reduction in the square footage, but one of the design features was about covering the car, that additional 2.5 feet, if otherwise they would extend out into the setback. Is that allowed, James?
The parking is not the main issue with the setback. The parking can have a lesser setback. It's the building, particularly at the upper levels.
Thank you. Richard, do you want to comment? You're muted.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah, so as James said, yes, it is mainly due to the size of the building, but where we did have a little bit of difficulty were finding ways and how to lay out the actual parking. I believe right now we have 22 feet between each row of parking spaces. So effectively, as you correctly mentioned, if the cars are able to stay and you'd be able to see them through the side, if they stay where they are, then we would be okay. But if we try to bring in the parking, then we wouldn't have enough width or to pull out the curb cut.
Are there any other aspect besides that that would force it?
I would say that that's the main driver, the okay. way that the parking is laid out and being able to accommodate it within the envelope and conceal it, so to speak.
One thing that the board could, of course, grant, because this has been properly noticed, is not at this meeting, but just for discussion, Mr. Bodner, is if the board was supportive of the variance at the ground level.
And, okay. And Jason, do you want to speak?
I was just gonna comment. Overall, I'm not really supportive of these kind of variances, especially on these side setbacks. As the properties get more lot coverage and the buildings get bigger, I think I strongly believe that space on the sides is really important, and every inch counts. And this is a big ask for me, and I most probably would not support this variance.
Okay, Scott, do you want to speak?
Yeah, I feel the same. I would really just to know what the setback variance is exactly for. How would not getting that affect this in the design of the interior? And also, the neighborhood, you know, hasn't been reached out to. We got the opposition, and I would not certainly grant any kind of variance without the neighborhood at least being contacted and explained why all this is being asked for.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else on the board wish to speak?
I would support the variance at the first floor only. I think it's, again, important to provide as much, I guess I'm aware of the constraints that are part of designing when you are providing parking. But I'm also aware of the need for light and space to adjacent properties. And so I would not be opposed to a first floor variance that allows for a little more elbow room, but then drawing the building back as you rise up to floors 2 and 3.
Thank you. And Marsh, do you have any comments about the landscaping?
I have to say that I could not find the landscape drawings in the original agenda that I had, and so I just have them open now, so I haven't had a chance to look at them.
Okay. Scott, do you want to join us again?
No, I didn't have any other questions, sorry.
Okay. So Richard, does that give you a good sense of where we are?
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much for your feedback. This information is really helpful for me to go back to the property owners and see how we could maybe remediate, as you mentioned, maybe really looking at the ground level and see how these two conditions can be treated almost maybe separately and see how we could satisfy something that helps the setback situation.
And I have one other comment, which is that you might look at putting a skylight above the stairwell, okay, because that continuous void in the middle of the building might light the light. But overall, the design is, I think, quite elegant.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We appreciate it.
I have one final comment. I do have the landscape drawings open now, so I've taken a quick look. It's a good plan. There's a lot of native plant material being proposed on the street. Again, if you could, Richard, if you could take a look with your landscape architect and the city to verify or try and ascertain what other street trees are going on 15th Terrace so that there could possibly be some continuity between the species across properties, that'd be great. The southeast and north sides are nicely dense with planting. But I'm not seeing anywhere in the planting plan any descriptions of vines or twining plants, climbing plants that you have talked about in terms of incorporating into the facade. So if you guys could go back and revisit that, that'd be great as well.
Absolutely. That is something. Yeah, I want to say that the ideas of the vines developed as we were developing the project, and it's possible that the landscape architect did not incorporate, but that is being one of the most important parts of the project. That is something that we would look into having included in there.
And I guess in conjunction with that then is also, are you expecting this plant material to grow solely from the ground up 3 stories, or will you be providing some planters at the terrace levels that also encourage that plant material to start a little bit higher?
That would be the intention, because otherwise I can see how it's a little bit unrealistic to see how planting from the ground level has to grow so far up. So I envision having some kind of a planter there with the vine, with the steel cables up top, so that it behaves the same way that it would at the ground level.
Okay, I think that's good. And then the other final thing in conjunction with that the south side is gonna get pretty hot. So just pay attention to maybe there it's more of a wood screen instead of the steel cables, because the vines would cook.
Okay.
Tend to cook on those steel cables. I don't know, you just talk to your landscape architect. I think there's, obviously you understand there's more development that needs to happen there, but it's headed the right direction for sure. So thank you
so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Marsh.
Richard, James Murphy here. When you reach back out to the team, let us know how you want to proceed in terms of being able to come up with a revised set of drawings so that we can ensure your placement, whether it's on the July meeting or if it will be substantial enough revisions that will move you to the August meeting.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you so much, James.
Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Very well done.
Thank you so much. Very helpful.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, board members. The next item that we'll be queuing up is item 2, DRB file 19-0493. This is 1790 Alton Road, an It'll be presented by Mr. Mickey Marrero, and Jennifer McConney is the architect of record. This is a one-story bank located on the eastern boundaries of the Sunset Harbor neighborhood. It has long been a vacant site, a triangular site at the crossroads of 18th Street and Dade Boulevard.
10 minutes on the phone?
Yes.
Mickey, are you doing the presentation?
Yes, I'll begin. Good morning.
Thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay, great. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board, staff. First of all, I'd like to thank everyone for making the time to do this discussion meeting. I certainly think it's very helpful to move things along when we do have a meeting and we can get through these items hopefully a little bit quicker. I know you guys are possibly facing a 40 item agenda next month, so that'll be a lot of fun for you, Mr. Chair, I can imagine.
Thank you. We're looking forward to it.
I can imagine. So up to this application, with me today is, and I believe I saw her logged in there, Jennifer McConney is our project architect. I'm Mickey Marrero from the law firm Burkhardt, Riddell, Fernandez & Larkin at 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Together we represent Megdell Properties and 1790 Holdings, the owner and developer of the 1790 Alton Road site. Just a little background on the property. The property has been vacant for well over a decade. Previously, it was the location of a service station that did have a curb cut on 18th and also on Dade Boulevard. That property was cleared and vacant after the discontinuation of the service station. And I can tell you personally, and I know Jennifer has had similar experience, many, many potential developers and potential users have looked at this property because it is obviously a very prominent location on Dade, on Alton Road. But because of its very, very irregular shape, and we're not requesting variances, I'm not saying it for that reason, but because of its very challenging size and shape and location, nothing has been able to proceed. I recall our office represented Madani at one point, which obtained an approval, but was not able to proceed. Several hotels had looked at this property and ultimately decided not to go forward. So now we finally have a user, and it's going to be a global bank that has decided to proceed on this property and found a way to develop it without any variances and a way that they believe will get the best use out of this property and finally bring it back to life. So again, I'll have Jennifer go into the detail of the shape and all of these challenges a little more, but that was a big challenge for us. Also, we had the benefit of, since we were supposed to be on the April agenda, we had the benefit of taking a look at some of the staff comments in the staff report well before. So Jennifer and her team did have an opportunity to make some modifications, which is not in your packet, but we've recently provided to staff on ways that we've been able to address many of the staff comments and the conditions in the proposed order. So Jennifer will also go into those. And finally, just what I do want to say is this is the first application that I had that went through the new DRC process, which gives applicants the ability to meet with the other departments outside of planning prior to submitting an application. And the reason we wanted to make sure we did that for this project was because we wanted to explore for our client and for the success of this property, a curb cut on Dade Boulevard is a critical component of the design. And when we met with transportation staff at the very beginning, we proposed a two-way ingress and egress curb cut off of Dade Boulevard. They expressed concerns with that as we anticipated. So working with transportation, we came to an agreement that we would submit a one-way only, in-only curb cut, and that's how it is before you. So that's, again, a very critical component in our project, because without it, our client does not believe the property will be successful and unfortunately may not be able to proceed. So with that, again, thank you all for your time. I'd like to transfer it over to Jennifer so that she can go through the plans with you all.
Thank you, Mickey.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Jennifer McConney with Studio MCG Architecture. Are you able to view, can we see the slides? Next slide, please. So the sites on the corner of Dade Boulevard and Alton, as well as 18th Street to the north. It's an interesting site because, one, we have three streets and not very much access. Where actually before in the past, there was a curb cut. I believe this was a gas station or some sort of service center back in the 90s. And there was a curb cut along Dade Boulevard and on 18th Street as well. Right now, you're not able to go to Alton Road from 18th. You can only enter into Alton, into 18th Street going west. You're not able to turn on Alton. You have to take a loop around, which you see just to the east of our site, of the triangular site, and then go west on Dade Boulevard. You can see the site is triangular. We were able to fit a 3,000 square foot bank on the site with the required amount of parking. Next slide. So it, what we wanted to do is we created a very simple structure. This is Miami Beach, so we can't do just any old bank. We have to make it inviting and welcoming for pedestrian traffic as well as vehicles. The structure is mostly glass along the three streets, and we have some glass facing the parking where the offices are, so there's always eyes on the parking. We have internal ATMs along the south side as you enter. And what we did is, since the facade is so simple and it made of glass, what we did is we're using a waffle slab. And we did this waffle slab in a triangular pattern, similar to the site and similar to the shape of the building. Next slide. This is a view from Alton Road, and that's that loop around road that you see on the east side. And there is a green space between Alton Road and that loop road that, you know, that's kind of, it inspired us to make a pavilion in the park. We were kind of lucky to inherit that green space that the city has. And so you really see this building with a foreground of green. And then we lined all the streets with palms and street trees that allow one to be able to walk as a pedestrian comfortably shaded. Next slide. This view is along 18th Street. And what we did is we added per staff's comments, which we thought was a great idea, because we have parking, we added what's called an armature. And that armature not only helps to screen the parking, but it also helps to give a street screen to the street. So it's not just an open area that, you know, it's something for the pedestrians to walk along. And what we did is the building is white, and we're creating accents of red with the landscape. We're using a poinsettia, and some of the ground cover also has some red tones to it. So we kind of pick that up with the landscape and the armature. Next slide. This is a view from Alton. Originally in the packet that was submitted, the corner entry along Alton had been removed, but we were putting it back. I think the bank is realizing there's so much pedestrian traffic here that we need this entry as well. So, you know, it was actually a great comment from staff, and we put that entry back on along Alton. Next slide. This is a site plan. You can see because of the shape of the lot, the building also takes a similar shape. We're a 3,000 square foot plus or minus bank. And you can see we've tried to put as much glass along the facade as possible. And we have the required amount of parking. So we were able to fit all that in, as well as a lot of green space as much as we could. And we placed trees in those green spaces, not only to make it more comfortable, but to screen the cars, shade the cars. What we did here is you can see
Jennifer,
in this
1 minute remaining.
Okay, I'll be quick.
If you need more time, just request.
Okay, we'll be fine. You can see here that the two accesses into the site. We have one in only along Dade Boulevard. And we have an entry and an exit along 18th Street. So if you're coming west on Dade, If we did not have that curb cut, you would have to kind of loop around three or four times just to get into the site. And because it's on the corner, you know, it just makes sense that we have that there. We do agree with transportation that it should be an in only. We have no problem with that. And then they're able to access our exit along 18th Street. Next slide. And you can go to the next one as well. So these are the images of the facades, the elevations. And you can see most of it is glass. And along the parking, we have vertical windows in each office space. So each, they're able to look at the parking area.
So there's Jennifer, screens. We'll
give you two more minutes. 2 minutes, James.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, next slide to the landscape. As you can see in this image, we have plenty of street trees. We really wanted this to be a pavilion in the garden, so in a park. So you have the green space to the right that's owned by the city. And then all the way around our building, we've placed trees of different types. Next page. And this is the palette of our landscaping. We wanted to take a lot of the red tones from the building and transfer that into the landscape. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Jennifer. Mm-hmm. Does anyone from the public wish to speak at this time concerning this project? Let me look. I see no one, so I'm going to close the public portion of this hearing and turn it over to the board for comments.
Jim, just before you board members begin to deliberate, just to summarize, the staff recommendation that you all had received was based on review of the initial set of plans that was scheduled for the April meeting. The presentation that was forwarded to the board members and to staff that is reviewing now certainly goes a long way to address many of the concerns that staff had, both in terms of basic site plan design and also the architecture. Most importantly, that reintroduction of a front porch, a front welcoming center at that corner of 18th Street.
Thank you. Jason? You're on.
Thank you, James. Jennifer, great job. I really like this project a lot. And when I was on the DRB 100 years ago, we approved another project here. So I'm really happy to see something that I feel is going to happen. Just a couple of quick questions. Are you putting these kind of armatures at both driveway entries?
No, but we could.
I'm just curious, and I would just. So is it on the one that has the in and out, or just on the in?
Right now, it's just on the in and out.
Okay. Yeah, I would say for me, it would be great to see a little bit more detail about what those are. I mean, we've all seen similar things. Some are better than others. So I'm sure the attention to detail you put in the roof and the glazing detailing will be echoed in those, but it would be nice to kind of see a little bit more detail for me. I'm a big fan of the waffle slab and the exposed structure. It's really quite, I think it's quite elegant. Can I ask who the bank is? Can you tell us who that is?
Unfortunately, our client has not been given the liberty to disclose any of that yet. So unfortunately, I cannot tell you who the bank is at this time, but it is a national prominent bank.
Yeah, that seems kind of strange and secretive to me, but that could just be me.
Well, we know their logo is red.
Well, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Santander, could be a lot of them.
Shanghai, yep.
Okay, I feel like it would be nice to know, guys. But otherwise, I think it's great. I'm really happy that you were able to fit. I mean, it's literally like a square peg in a round hole, or vice versa. And I know all the energy your team has put in, Jennifer, to kind of making this work. And I think it would be really nice to see that there on that corner, a really pretty piece of architecture that would have some significance in a very, very visible corner.
And Jason, you are comfortable with the site plan configuration of the parking with the one-way drive off Dade and the two-way access from 18th Street?
I am comfortable with that, yep.
I'm going to jump in here and is it possible, or did you look at a one-way driveway?
I think that would limit 18th Street a lot. Some people want to go back into, some people are coming from Sunset Harbor, and I wouldn't want to limit that for a one-way, because I don't think there's any issues with 18th Street being two-way.
Yeah, I only mention it because these parking lots tend to swallow up buildings. Excuse me. And if you could include more landscaping, the greatest part about your building is the objectness of it. And separating large asphalt or paved areas, separating them, surrounding them by building more by trees and making it part of the architecture almost, might help. And the one way, everyone's going to exit onto 18th no matter what, just slingshot mm-hmm. around the corner, driving around only that building, find the entrance may not be a bad experience.
We did do that, and what happened is we lost a lot of parking, because what happens is you have to angle the parking, so you do lose about three spaces when you do that, and they do need that parking.
Yeah, this board had a previous meeting where we talked about the necessity of having parking directly adjacent to the back of a building, the back of a bank, and I'm not sure it's as important as to making the building more attractive. In fact, we could probably give a relief on the number of parking spaces. And is it just employee parking, or is it the guest parking?
It's guest parking. But what we did is we have, you know, trees that can have larger canopies. So what that does is it hides, it shields from the top the parking. So that cools the area. So that should be, you know, just as good as having, you know, the grass there.
Okay, Marsh, would you like to speak?
Always. I would always like to speak.
we look forward to it.
This is a nice plan, and I think it's good architecture, and I applaud the design team on this one. I think that I like the armatures only on 18th Street because their counterpoint along Dade is going to be the big poinciana tree. So I think that's a very successful marriage of red planting to red architectural elements. So I would not like to see additional architectural red elements, I think, on the Dade side. I understand what you are saying, Jim, and I agree with you. If that was a one-way system, that would certainly possibly allow for more of the building in the park that Jennifer's talking about. However, I also appreciate having an in and out of at least one of these site access for vehicles. If they've looked at it and they lose substantial amounts of parking, I can appreciate the client's kind of concern there. If you guys would study that one more time, that'd be great. But if you come back to the conclusion that you need two-way off of 18th, I would certainly not argue against it. I would only recommend that you take a look at a different species of street tree, because those pigeon plums are going to be super dense in their canopy.
Okay. And
you might want to look at a species that's a little more open, so that we don't lose that architecture behind a dense wall of green. I think the pigeon plums along the west side is perfect, because they'll fill that in, and that's the Staples right there that we're adjacent to, correct? Or Home Office Depot, Staples.
Yes.
Or is that the storage?
Office Depot.
So that'll be wonderful to have that sort of screen, and then the completion of that row of pigeon plums down to the south is a great idea. But I think along your visible frontages. You've got the Sables, which will be great, but don't count anymore, sadly. So you might want to look at a different species there to lighten that up. Otherwise, I think it's a nice plan. Good plan. The bike parking is currently, it looks, depending on what plan I'm looking at, it's either adjacent to the south entrance or kind of scattered in a couple places around the site. Where do you have it living at this point?
We moved it. So we did scatter it because we know that there might be some employees using bikes. So we put two in the parking lot, and then we put some along 18th in the setback.
So there, so the rendering shows it off that south entrance. That's not where they are anymore?
No, we moved it because it was kind of conflicting with the entry there. So we moved them.
All right. Just make sure that you don't end up losing too much landscape because of those scattered racks.
Okay. Can look at that.
Michael.
Thank you. That was great.
Michael,
thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Michael, I believe you're muted. Okay.
Trying to unmute. Nope. There you go. I think I joined too late to make any comments on this one.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
You know, one curious thing we don't talk enough about probably is night lighting on this building should be really strong. If you can light up that ceiling, that triangular structured ceiling, I think it'd be spectacular to see a flute in this so-called garden.
That's a great idea.
Jennifer, let me know if you want to amend the drawings, and we'll upload this latest presentation duly as the new formal submittal so that you could stay on track for July.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Hey, everyone. Well done.
Appreciate your comments.
And Mickey. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item that we'll be queuing up is Design Review Board File DRB 20-0526. This is a single family home located at 1030 West 47th Street. Mickey Marrero will be presenting, and I believe we also will have the owner of the property, Mr. Michael Nadler, available for presentation.
Okay, Mickey.
Good morning again, everyone. Thank you again. So on this property, unfortunately, our architect, George Pernas, could not join this, but we still thought it would be helpful to go over this project because there are some peculiarities about the approval process that I wanted just to share with you all. So Michael Nadler is the property owner. I believe he's logged in as well.
Yes, I'm here.
And his wife, Annabelle, how are you?
Morning.
So the background for this project, it received, and some of you I'm sure were on the board, in 2018, it received DRB approval for substantially the same home that is before you today. It received approval. Part of the approval was, and it came to you all because it was a pre-1942 home, and it had some non-conforming setbacks on the side walls. The board allowed those non-conforming walls to remain and approved the project as a partial demolition and followed the requirements of the code for that type of project. It obtained a permit, construction, you know, was beginning to start. They're beginning demolition and site preparation. And unfortunately, at that point, the contractor, without, you know, the formal approval of the city and without the consent of my client, demolished one of these nonconforming walls. And as I'm sure you've seen before, when a partial demolition becomes total demolition, it triggers a whole different set of regulations in the city code. And that's what occurred here. And unfortunately, without really, you know, my clients understanding what was going on, their permit was revoked and the project stopped. So that's when we got involved and met with staff and we really want to commend staff for working with us and getting us through this. What I can tell you is that the contractor, the provisions in the code allow this board to waive the penalties that are imposed on property owners when a contractor acts without the approval of the architect and the owner. And that's unfortunately what occurred here. My client is no longer associated with the same contractor. They've sent a demand letter to that business, and that's going to take a process of its own. But what we had to do is bring our architect back in and modify the plans. This new version, and if we can get the PowerPoint put on screen, this new, I say new loosely, and we can go to the next slide. This current version of the plan is substantially the same home, using the same materials, the same design, same architect. The primary difference is that it's just a tiny bit smaller. And it's smaller because we're no longer using the non-conforming walls. We brought the project in and did not choose to ask for variances to keep those walls. So essentially, the project that was already approved, that was permitted and beginning construction, is the same project that you will see now. This is the site plan, which shows the location of the pool and shows two parking spaces and basically the layout of a very simple single-family home. The home that was there before was about 1,800 square feet. This home is a little over 2,500. So it's still well below the maximum lot coverage, well below the maximum unit area. If we could have the next slide. And here's just, again, detail on the setbacks and the spacing of the home. Again, complying with all site regulations in the code. Next slide. And we can go through these next few. These are the 3D renderings here. Again, if you all recall the prior project, it's substantially the same. We have the pool in the rear, some change in shape and size of the home throughout the project to give it some interesting views. All of the components now, the previous version actually slightly exceeded the height. This is now all within the 18 feet height limit. Next slide. And again, I just want to point out that the use of materials that is called out here includes porcelain tile and some stone cladding in the middle structure and the structure into the front of the home. Next slide. Here's the rendering of the rear. Next slide. And I apologize for me not being an architect. I would do a better job explaining these, but I just want you all to see. Again, just another view. Next slide. And then I just wanted you all to see the landscape plans. Unfortunately, I know Mr. Kriplin cannot participate because his firm worked on these plans, but I just wanted you all to see. The next slide. And again, here is just a sampling of some of the species that would be included. And there's pretty lush landscaping on the perimeter of the property and throughout. And again, this also is consistent with the approval that was given in 2018. So the reason, and that concludes this, and I just want to close with, the reason that we wanted to come before you prior to the July hearing was twofold. The project was well underway. The Nadlers have been carrying this property for years now. They still have not been able to not only not move into their home, but even start construction. So we wanted you to all see it before, so that hopefully if you're all comfortable with this in the July hearing, we could certainly get approved as one of the 40 items that you'll have to hear. And they can then get their permit and get this project started again. And we ask specifically, as noted in the staff report, that you all agree to waive the additional regulations imposed on total demolition, because we certainly was never our intent. And the only thing that has caused for our client is to make a slightly smaller home, fine, and to be required to lose almost a year of time, if not more. So with that, I will tell you that we agree with all of staff's comments and conditions, and happy to answer any other questions you may have. I don't know if Michael and Annabelle have anything they want to add.
No, although it's good to see you all, we're sorry this happened, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Mickey. Anyone else from the public wish to speak at this time? I see no one, so I'm going to close the public portion and turn over to the board for comments.
So I'd just like to recap. Some of this board members and those were present when this application came before the board. And for those that are new, I could just summarize. Basically, sometime around 2018, This board reviewed and approved modifications to a one-story pre-1942 home that sought two things. One, to retain existing non-conforming setbacks, and two, to modernize the structure to move it away from a Mediterranean style to a more contemporary style that would better match their the owner's needs. Speaking in terms of the actual development on the site, it was a very modest request. That 2018 approval would have permanently removed the status of architectural significance of the house. That application was approved unanimously by this board, including the variances. As Mickey mentioned, the building permit was applied for the substantial improvements that were reflective of the original DRB approval. Unbeknownst to the applicants, the contractor exceeded the extent of demolition, and those non-conforming walls, which they strove so hard to retain due to the non-conforming setbacks, were demolished. Our code requires, pursuant to section 142.108(i)(6) of the single family home regulations, that in the event that the owner of a single family home constructed prior to 1942, which has been demolished without the required permits or approvals, can establish good cause, the design review board may relieve the property owner of some or all of the limitations of the new construction herein. The requirement of good cause shall be satisfied when the unauthorized demolition was solely the result of intentional or negligent acts of a duly licensed contractor or third parties, and the owner had no role and no knowledge of the unauthorized demolition. The applicant has informed staff that the contractor for the previous home acted in an unauthorized manner, that they had no knowledge in the unpermitted and unauthorized demolition. Staff fully supports the approval of the proposed modifications to the home, the new one-story home, including the relief of the requirements of the section therein.
Thank you, James. Any board comments?
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment, please.
Okay, Scott.
First of all, I'm really happy to see a one-story house being put up and not a huge mansion. And so I need to be devil's advocate and go through the history of this, because these are the kinds of things you see that are really frustrating to preservationists and myself. I have to say, like, I just, to be clear, the walls that are left are basically there to get away from a setback. I think the intention of that law is to maintain some architectural significance, but to the layperson, that looks like a total loophole to get rid of that setback variance because it was existing. So that's number one. And I think that's a problem with the code. I think it's a problem that, you know, it's neither here nor there at this stage, but I think it needs to be addressed, because I think the intent of leaving those original walls to get that setback is to maintain architectural significance. So to destroy a house except for one wall that has no architectural significance to maintain it, you know, seems like a loophole that people really get frustrated with. Number two, I got to know who this contractor was, what the penalty was, and how we move forward from this, because I'm not blaming these owners. It seems like everybody thinks they were unaware of this, but you know, I've seen this happen. We've all seen it happen in the past where they just knocked it down and said, now you can't. So I want to know what the fine was, what the contractor, who that was, and what they had to do.
So
Mickey,
yeah,
do you want to address that?
So first off, Scott, so the fine that my client has had to pay is obviously, in addition to hiring an attorney now, hiring an architect again to fix the plans, go through this entire process. They're also paying the carrying cost of that property for almost an additional year while they have to stay in their rental property. And they have to now completely repay the permit fees. They don't just get to carry on the prior permit. That permit was revoked. All fees are waived. And now we have to pay from scratch all the permitting fees. So it's a significant cost. As to the contractor, those costs are hard costs. And, you know, I'm not the litigator, so there'll be other penalties that will be probably claimed on that contractor. As to who the contractor is, I'm not the litigation counsel. I would personally, since it is likely to end up in litigation and a demand letter has been initiated, I would rather not get into the specifics of the case in a public forum. If you'd like to know more details, I would be happy to speak to you offline. I don't feel comfortable going into details about the contractor and the case in this forum, if we can avoid it. Because there's another lawyer that's going to be dealing with that later. But it is public record. You. Yeah.
Jason, you want to join us?
Thank you, James. Mr. Murphy, just so I understand, does the current design and the site and the setback of the current drawings we got, this does now comply with the current codes, current muni code?
Correct.
Okay. And only the reason why it's kind of going to, and when it comes before us formally, and maybe this is a question to the applicant and to Mickey, it'll be a full package, like with the site plans and all the photos and all the stuff that the DRB requires as part of their package?
Yes, absolutely. The package that has been submitted that is available at the city now has existing photos, context photos, and more expansive drawings, FAR diagrams, everything. I just didn't want to go through like a 40-page set with you all today. Okay. But the application file does have everything.
And then I would just my last strong request maybe to the clients. I would love to know if they would consider entertaining raising the base flood elevation of the home a little higher than it is. I know, yes, you comply with the code, your base flood elevation plus one, but one of my tasks being on the board is to promote and to strongly suggest better approaches to potential sea level rise, et cetera. And you have the luxury of not having the pressure of, you know, a height restriction with a one-story home, and the benefit of being able to bring your base flood up, your first floor level up a little higher than it is right now. And in the long run, I think this would be a really good decision to make. And I would not foresee it adversely affecting the cost of your project. That would be a strong ask from me.
Thank you, Jason.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Just want to comment that I'm sure the landscape plan is untouchable. Thanks to Marsh.
And obviously, Marsh, Mr. Kriplin will be recusing himself for the action item and for this hearing, for this virtual meeting as well.
Thank you, James.
And just for the board's benefit and Mr. Kriplin's benefit, under the county code of ethics as to voting conflicts, Marsh is required to verbally and affirmatively recuse from discussion. So I don't know if you can hear me, Marsh.
I formally recuse myself from this discussion.
Okay, and we've provided Marsh with a conflict disclosure form, which he'll submit, and we'll maintain that in the hearing file.
Thank you, Nick. Any other comments? Well, thank you, Nadlers. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Nice seeing you, Annabelle.
Nice to see you too, Mr. Murphy. Have a good day, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Mickey.
I lost my agenda. There we go. Sorry about that. The next item that we'll be calling up is DRB file 20-0519. This is the Palau Condominium located at 1201 to 1237 20th Street. Presenting today will be Marcella Sardi and Federico Balestrazzi. To summarize real quick, basically for reasons that the applicant will expand upon, the Palau Condominium is seeking design review approval to remove an exterior contrasting material and replace it with a colored stucco treatment. That exterior finish, because it was a non-stucco finish originally presented and approved by this board in 2012 needs to be approved by the design review board and exceeds my administrative abilities. Staff is supportive of the application. Notes that at the original approval, it was presented to the board to be a much higher quality material and not a porcelain tile cladding. It was a resistive wood cladding, which had warmer tones than what was installed. Sometime during the permitting process, that material change was modified, changed from the resista to the tile cladding. That was determined that it didn't need to go back to the board. Again, as the Marcello will present for not the best construction application of the tiles, they becoming a little unhinged, and the board is seeking its complete removal. Staff is supportive of the application as proposed.
Who will be making a presentation, Federico?
Okay, Marcella, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm the engineer that is actually assisting the condo association with the 558 and the restoration. Marcella is part of the board, and she will be presenting. I will be adding to it if it's necessary, and I will try to answer all the technical questions and the reasoning behind it, you know, from a technical perspective if it's needed.
Okay, thank you. Is she on?
She should be on.
Marcella, if you're on, please raise your hand to be identified. If you're in the Zoom, please raise your hand, or to Mike Rubin. Just give me one moment here. Caller, you're live. Marcella, hello?
Can you hear us, Marcella?
Okay. Marcella, are you there? Marcella's not responding. All right. Can you give her a call, Federico, to give her some assistance to see if she's...
She was in, and let me see if I can get in touch with her.
Okay, thank you.
Otherwise, I will be presenting.
Okay.
Oh, she says she's on.
Can she hear us?
Does she have a screen name? Did she sign in her name? Or is she calling on the telephone?
Let me ask her.
Thank you.
Oh, Mike Rubin is the name.
Okay, thank you so much. That's where the confusion is. So just give me one moment here, and I'll bring
it. Sorry about that.
That's all right. Mike Rubin. Okay, she's joining us now. Just give me one moment here. I'm going to ask her to start her video and unmute herself. Hey, Marcella, we just
removed you. I think you're muted, Marcella.
There she is.
There.
Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Yes, we can hear you and we can see you.
Okay, I can't see myself in any way, and I cannot see anything there. I'm sorry about that. I guess my Zoom says Mike Rubin, but I was not able to change it from here, not touch the Zoom. All right, here I am. And if you can put this, thank you for the time. We have been trying to present this since May, and thanks for the opportunity. We have been guidely, I need to thank the city to get us through this process, which I was not familiar with. I'm with the Board of Palau, and then we have Federico, who has been our engineer and have been in the discovery. You can put the slides in. Okay. We are seeking, as James said it, to change the facade tile for designer stucco. We are in the process of a 558 and suing the developer right now, and we are starting construction, changing our roof for leakage through the roof and cracking through the existing stucco. So we're starting on June 7th as we are getting the permits from the city. Part of this we need to address the facade tiles because they have been debonding. Could you move the slide, please? Another one? Another one? Okay, we're in the corner of 18th and Sunset Drive. Let's move to the next slide. Okay, this is the views from the islands from Sunset, the corner of Palau. Let's move, because I want to take you to the problem. Let's move. Another one. Let's please keep moving. Keep moving. Another one. Another one. All right. The two things that we're seeking, the bonding of the tiles and on this, on the existing condition in the east elevation, we have a problem when the developer put the scuffs out into the retail doors and they don't have any way to drain except into the front doors and into the glass. So we are trying to put a gutter there once we repair the stucco, because all this needs to be repaired. Next slide, please. Next slide. This is the issue. It's an emergency issue because if one of these tiles, which is about 8 inches by, I think they're 18 by 24, they fail. This was on top of our garage and they fall. If it hits a car or anybody, like we're in big trouble. A lot of them kept on debonding. So there was a study, and Federico can answer that question, and it's the way that the tiles were installed, which little plots that they will debond. It's just a matter of time. Let's keep on.
Yeah, I can, Marcela, if you want to stay on the tiles for a second, I can explain a little better.
Yeah, go ahead.
This whole process started because of the debonding of the tiles in some of the common areas, and the most evident one was the garage entrance where every car pretty much gets into the building. And we saw that they were pulling away from the substrate and forming like a sawtooth shape. And slowly they were coming apart. And so we went up there, we start tapping to see which one were hollow and which one were not. And then we actually identified two areas very, very close by. And we start removing some of the tiles that sounded hollow. In one area, we saw up to 40% of the tiles delaminating or not having the 100% coverage of the material in the back. And so we start removing them and replacing them. And soon enough, we realized that the problem was systemic and it was throughout the building. So in addition to that, the tiles were installed on top of stucco. So that didn't help. And part of the process of the discovery was also to find a solution, either to put it back or to provide an alternative that would be equally aesthetically pleasing and that would perform over time as it was intended originally. And that's why we're here.
Next slide. Thank you, Federico. So this is the existing elevations. Let's go back. It shows exactly where these elevations are. Next slide, please. This is where the facades are. Like on the top one is just the balconies. You don't see them. Let's next one. Next one. So this is what we're proposing. It's a designer stucco, which is very smooth and is colored through. So it's like it's bonded through. And it has a long warranty. Let's keep on. We need a rendering for every facade. Keep on. Next slide, please. Next slide. This is on top of the gym. Next slide. This is an interior view. We have to change that too because those have delaminated too. Next slide. This is the retail area that has the issue. Next slide. This is the interior balconies. This is the facing. Nobody really sees that except the owners of the units because the way is an interior look. Next slide. This is at the top in the ceiling. You see the little facade, little pieces in the roof. They're small walls. Next slide, please. And this is how we're going to repair them. Next slide. This is an interior from the pool. Next slide. And this is the second item. This is the facade, the gutters on the facade. Let's keep on moving.
So hold on, Marcel, before you move on, if I can explain a little more. The intent is to remove the existing tiles from the stucco, remove the substrate of the stucco, repair the waterproofing that could have been debonded, provide a good bonding agent, and then reapply new stucco. We select a stove, in this case, which is an excellent manufacturer from Germany that provides an extended warranty to it and has both a great array of finishes and joint selection and also paint color that matches and that provides the waterproofing the needs that we have. And we're in the process of making a mock-up to see what the colors would be and if the color presented here in the presentation is warm enough to match the existing or if it should be something a little darker, but the options are there. The client has spared no money into providing this type of fix and it's not the replacement that they're proposing is not any cheaper than putting back the cheap tiles that were installed there originally.
In my opinion, it's a better look because the existing tiles, I don't think that even the architect was happy with them. Anyway, let's keep on to the facade because I know we're constrained with time. This is the east facade where the retail owners are, and you can see the scuppers where they are and how the water falls on top. It's been a nightmare for them. Let's keep on. This is what we're proposing. Next is the rendering. Next slide, please. Here's the rendering, how we propose to do that because it's a long facade and we want to match the gutter to the stucco color so it's less noticeable. We love our building and we want to keep the design of the building, which I think is really a nice design. And that ends our presentation. Because it's an emergency, we are starting on June 7th, and I know you cannot approve anything on this meeting, but at least you can hear what the problem and the issues are.
Well, let's also say that we submitted for a permit on the stucco repairs, and we're going to be repairing the stucco area and not necessarily right away the tiles because we're going to wait for you guys to let us know which direction we're going.
Thank you, Federico and Marcella. Does anyone from the public wish to speak about this project? I don't see anyone, so I'm going to close the public portion and turn over the board for comment.
Can we move all of our meetings to Federico's wine cellar?
That's they're all invited if you pass the day.
Marcella, when do you think you'll have the mock-up done?
We're working on it. We have it very soon.
Good.
Federico, when is that be done? When probably
The substrate is done. We're gonna paint probably in the next couple of days. We're waiting for it to dry.
But James, was the original change from the fake wood product to the tile approved by the board?
No, it was staff level approval.
Jason, you want to join it?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, James. For better or for worse, I had the benefit of being the board chair when this project was going through the design review board back in the day. And I don't know if any of you are from this neighborhood or were familiar with this project during its development, but it was a very, very contentious project. Very large, the folks that lived on the Sunset came out. Sunsets came out in droves, in force. We had, and James, I can't remember if you were involved in that at that time, but multiple continuances and presentations and long, long meetings. So for me to see the project go from what we thought was going to have the faux wood or the resista or something similar, you know, which was something the neighborhood really fought for. You know, this is a huge project from, you know, from both sides of the, from all sides, let's face it, especially if you're on the Sunsets and it's in a residential neighborhood. To then have it go to the tile, which I understand is very unfortunate that the installers did not install it, you know, per the Tile Council of America's guidelines, and they used the spot mortar. And, you know, obviously you can put tile on buildings and it will stay on buildings for hundreds of years. You just, or at least 100 years, if you can see many of the buildings in Los Angeles and Oakland, California and India, there's tile all the way up on skyscrapers. So to think that this is just going to go to a stucco, albeit a decorative colored stucco, I'm really not a fan. And I feel it's a big disservice to the residents in that area and to the residents of the beach to just basically have this be another stuccoed building with, you know, a kind of a, I would, no offense to the architect because he's a friend of mine, but I, at best, you know, the original renderings of this project were the best version of this project, unfortunately. And when I saw that staff was recommending the, you know, approval for the stucco, I was kind of amazed. I'm really surprised. I would strongly support another type of mechanically fastened system, whether it is a wood or something. I mean, the whole point of the other material is a warmth and a texture and breaking up these masses. And then just to put a gray stucco or a brown stucco with some joinery, which at this point I see is not very complicated or very interesting, is not something I will support.
Thank you.
It's not just a stucco. It's a better solution than what we have today. Because ultimately, if a tile fails, falls on top of anybody, it's a safety issue. So it's just not like stucco. It would be a good, like we, I live in the building, I'm a designer architect, and I don't want a building that looks like a bad building. Obviously, if you see the mock-up, you may change your mind.
And that was my point. I think the whole thing is going to rest on your mock-up. And if the mock-up looks as boring, as untextured and unarticulated as the rendering do, I don't know if it'll fly. Others?
I would agree. I'm not opposed to stucco, but I think it needs to have more life and more warmth and a little more detail than what we're seeing in the renderings. And I agree that the mock-up will tell the tale, but I think they need to do more than one mock-up. I think they need to do the mock-up as currently presented, and then I think they need to have their architect develop a solution that has a little bit additional attention to detail and color.
Jason?
Yes, oh, I'm done.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
May I speak? I also remember what a dramatic episode that was with the neighbors on this design. And I got to say again, I think it's a horrible precedent to allow shoddy workmanship to change a design after the fact. So that's all. I think that's a really terrible precedent, and I think it's a really poor excuse. I'm not an architect. I'm just saying from the design point of view, when something's approved, just because it was shoddily put up doesn't mean we should allow something cheaper and easier.
Yeah, and I think there are options in between tile and stucco that could be looked at.
But
that are equally resilient and possibly a better installation.
So I would like to understand what that is, because we've been working on this for the past 5 months and construction is starting now. So I would like to, if we can put an image of what is it that you do not like about it. I just want to understand what, like, if you go, Miami is a deco city where stucco is the most amazing thing in the city. So I like to understand why is it that the stucco doesn't give you.
Well, I think some stucco is more sculptural than what you represent, and which are the better part of the buildings in Miami Beach. There are other materials that look like wood that are synthetic. There are the great thing about the tile is that you have a sense of hand construction. Each piece was put up separately, and each piece had its own character, and so there's a real scale there and texture that is not going to be in the stucco, I fear.
So you're opposed to stucco? Because it's like we...
Again, the mock-up will tell the story, but if the mock-up is what you're representing in your drawings, I personally wouldn't approve it. But I'm only one.
I think I need to agree with the general consensus. There was a degradation in initial quality, and this seems to be another step downward. I think it needs to move back to closer to what it was originally proposed.
So I think the guidance we're giving you is that we understand the critical nature of the requirement, but the solution as presented as just a striped stucco is not going to be looked at favorably. So you may do that as a mock-up, but you also need to have your architect develop one or two other solutions that can be included in the mock-up for review and approval.
Okay, I mean.
I think that's a good recommendation, Marge. Anyone have a comment on the gutter? It seems like a very practical, straightforward solution. Would not recommend that it just be a rectangular box, maybe. But it actually could have a profiler shape.
Yes, I think the gutter, if we can go, can we go back to the gutter elevation rendering, please? I'm all for the gutter, but this rendering is missing the sconces, and it's also missing the mailbox on the right side of the drawing. So it's not 100% accurate, and I believe that like the awning or eyebrow to the left, the gutter needs to have a little bit more definition, architectural definition, and not be a like you said, Jim, a box applied to the facade.
And this is Jason. I'm assuming those gutters and those downspouts will drain into the existing, will be connected to the existing drain system. They don't just drain onto the sidewalk, right? You'll have a fully engineered and city approved solution.
Yes. The current scuppers are just draining on the sidewalk in their location. So that's the interesting part. Right on top of the entrance of the retail space, which is one of the reason why, you know, we're trying to find a solution where it doesn't. And yeah, it doesn't flood the sidewalk every time that it rains heavily. So even the people walking by do not incur into slippage.
Yeah, I mean, Marcel and Frederico, I for sure I'm empathetic to the, you know, the pain you and the condo association are going through with this project. Unfortunately, it's way too common here that construction defects occur, and the condo association board is left to pick up the pieces. So I definitely feel your pain, and I understand you just want to get to a resolution. But it's our job as the design review board just to make sure that at the end of the day that the resulting piece of architecture is meets a design review board standards and is a representative, strong piece of architecture for the city of Miami Beach. So we appreciate you coming in front of us and, you know, offering these solutions. We're always here to work with our applicants, of course.
Mm-hmm. So I would love.
And just to add to that piece, Marcella, hold on a second. Let me just finish my thought on that. I think that in their board defense, because I'm not part of the board, I'm one of the engineers working with them. The intent was never to try to water down the original design with another stucco portion of it attached to it. But the intent there was to try to provide a stucco solution that was an upgrade versus a typical flat white stucco that you might see everywhere else. I think the mock-up will tell more. The way it's presented will tell more. And then in the meantime, we can think of other solution if there are any available to present it to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the other board members are more than happy to come by and see a mock-up or a few different versions. I mean, surprise me. Mm-hmm. You
know? All right, so that is great. So let me ask you, how do I communicate through James? I communicate, and we will do that because it's not only, there are many things that are going, this building has to change a roof. So there's a lot of expenses attached to that. On top, we have a safety issue with the tiles because either we do something that we can do and afford and looks great, or we leave the tiles and they fall and then we have a lawsuit. So it's not like we can leave the tiles. I mean, we probably have to leave the tiles if you guys don't approve it. But so we will do a mock-up with probably three options, and we will call you in between this meeting and July. And much appreciated if you can actually join us for that.
Yes, Marcella, this is James Murphy. Yes, I mean, the board members, and I'm sure are willing to go and do a site visit. Of course, that'll have to be independent, so that they cannot go as in a group or more than one. And Jason, I have my tenure here at the planning department. I was employed in the planning department, but I was not liaison to the design review board for the original approval. I think I joined as design review staff just after that. I do, however, know the contentious history, and I did, however, thoroughly review the previous drawings, final hearing that was approved by the board, and most importantly, the enumerated conditions within the final order. And as this board knows, because not too long ago, there was an application for modification to the Palau for the actual rooftop activation for certain unit owners and including increased stairwell access. Now in the 2012 final order, Jason and all the board members, there are so many specific conditions that really address the quelling of the Sunset Harbor neighbors, the Sunset Island neighbors, and basically kind of really identified the issues that needed to be quote unquote controlled in order for that board at the time of which Jason was the chairperson to be comfortable enough to grant approval for the project, because it was very contentious. It was very lengthy. I believe it ran at least a year of continuances. And finally the neighbors wanted it to be reheard, which was eventually denied. That said, for all the specific conditions regarding rooftop projections and reduced massing and reduced and increased setbacks and rooftop elements that cannot be approved at the staff level but would have to come back to the board level, what the final order was relatively silent on was the exterior finishes. Therein it just said the final exterior finishes shall be subject to the review and approval of staff. It's probably that general condition that allowed through the permitting process that substitution from the warm resista to the not so warm but intended to be warm porcelain tile. And then, of course, when I met with Marcella and the Palau Condominium Association and saw the proposal, I too, like many of the reactions here, said, well, I can't approve this at staff level, but understanding the circumstance, you know, come back for the board to be reviewed. But I just wanted to, you know, basically chime in on, you know, that I was cognizant of the history and did my diligence in terms of researching in order to come to the recommendation.
Understood. I know you're very thorough, James. Don't worry.
Can I ask about those scuppers? Are those the actual roof drains or are those overflow roof drains?
Federico is left. I think that's you're here, there, Federico?
Go ahead. Those are the roof drains.
Those are the roof drains.
The main drains. Yes, the main drains.
Is that building on the property line?
It's part of the property, yes, because for the restoration, we had to get a right-of-way permit, you know, for the sidewalk.
Is the face of that building on the property line, or is that your property?
No, Jim, there's a, Michael, there's a setback.
There's a setback on that. I can't imagine, you know, the code requires you to keep all your water on your own property. So I don't understand how that works in that condition. And I don't understand how it was approved like that.
Well, if it's in a setback area and there's a drain, it will be all within the property line. We had someone by the name of Darren Gursky who had his hand up, who's an attendee.
He's our attorney. Yes, the condo attorney.
Darren Gursky, do you still wish to speak?
I appreciate that. Well, Chairman James, Mr. Murphy, actually, I raised my hand before Mr. Murphy spoke, and he mentioned everything that I was going to mention with respect to what the underlying DRB order provided respect to the construction. So he was pretty spot on in terms of his analysis. That's what I was going to mention as to the underlying requirements of the original approval. I don't know where my video went, but there you go. So what Mr. Murphy said, I support for on behalf of the association. I want to mention another thing real quickly. This repair or replacement, as previously mentioned, and it was mentioned in an email to Mr. Murphy, these replacement becomes a in the event of whether or not the tile could fall off at any moment, depending upon how it's affixed to the property and whether or not there's underlying water intrusion that may flow behind it and loosen up the tiles at any moment. It's almost, I don't want to say unpredictable, because you just never know unless there's that constant checking of the tiles throughout their life cycle. That creates a really dangerous situation, let alone a continually unrealistic ongoing maintenance responsibility. Also, at the same time, too, obviously the maintenance of the property is paramount to the board of directors, and the water intrusion coming from those particular areas is also creating an issue with the individual unit owners who are on the other side of the wall. So on top of the board being prudent in attempting to eliminate a life safety issue, it's also creating a more efficient maintenance responsibility in the effort to avoid further damage. So that's why it's critical on a couple different levels.
James, is there any way, obviously if it's a hazard, we should be getting ourselves in the way of it. Is there a way that they can remove the tile immediately?
Yes, and our planning director, Darren, already reached out to the applicant that if the building department determines that this is a matter of life safety, staff and planning staff would sign off on the permit to remove it under the assumption that the eventual replacement of the tile or wood or stucco finish would be dependent on this board's approval. One of the things I would like to add for the applicant in terms of doing the analysis of different kinds of texturing of this stucco is to, again, maybe make a presentation. If you could show the board that perhaps the extent of this material is not as great or as extensive as your elevation drawings might appear. The largest field, that parking garage, the back building, which has the largest amount of the tile, in the drawing on page 6 of my memo, shows it, and you really see the expanse of it, but that's because the Comras construction building is ghosted out. And that's the area that's furthest set back from the street and then has this 1.5-story commercial building in front of it. So I think it may be good to present to the board the analysis of how much, what percentage of the facade is actually consumed by the contrasting material. I think that in defense of staff recommendation, it goes a long way as to emphasize that the overall design of the architecture is really interesting and has a lot of forms that, while yes, the contrasting material furthered that because it was nestled within these framing elements, the building isn't just a block of white stucco. And that is where staff was comfortable with the applicant's proposal.
That is a great point, because the pieces are not enormous, but they are located in very specific places, like the entrance of the garage, the entrance to the retail, and the entrance to the building. So that's where, yeah.
It's mostly on the 20th Street facade.
If you can put it up, it's very obvious.
Any other comments from the board? So, Federico,
thank you.
And Marcella,
I am going helpful? To go away, but I need to go away with a very straightforward direction on the gutter, like the. What is a, we cannot do, what is a designer gutter? It's going to be blended. It's going to be blended with the color, whatever that background is.
Marcella, is that, if I understand, that retail area is going to also go in the stone or the tiles being taken off.
Yes.
And the other stucco or another solution will go there. And whatever solution that is, I would recommend the gutter look like it's an integral part of the original building, as opposed to someone using the word applied.
But there may be
a more architectural solution for it to look like it's always there.
But so you have to be realistic about this. We have the engineers and we have studied these for over a year and a half. I brought here a lot of people. So we cannot add like a concrete. We can only add a gutter to that place that is integral to the finish that is behind. I just want to be clear, because I cannot tell you that I'm going to do something I cannot do. I cannot change the architecture facade of that. So, yes, it will be a gutter. Yes, it will be the same color as the background. And we will do our best in, making it as part of the building as it is. I cannot tell you that it's going to be inside the building. There are private balconies. We cannot do that. So, Federico, could you add to this? Because I just want realistic solutions.
No, I was brainstorming when this whole thing was being discussed, and if it was a matter of the finding something that is not as prominent as it was detailed. It's really difficult because if we don't do an apply, gutter, we have no options to go inside the building and to drain it internally, because we have retail spaces right beneath it. So we're kind of limited with the option that we have available in this case. And the only thing that we could do, it would be probably try to conceal it. Maybe with some green, if we add that to it, but that would be just about it that I could think of.
But there's a parapet there. So is that parapet not structural? Is there no way to attach a wider awning style architectural element that includes the gutter along that facade? I don't.
So you say like a cladding, you mean, on top of it?
Well, something more like an awning, but that's just not an applied box that would tie back to the structure behind.
Okay. Well, we can. I mean, I can think of a of
so if solution. You, would, if, you look at a, if you look at A34, which is your axon of that facade, on the left is the existing awnings that are part of the other architectural element portion of the building off to the north or to the left. And that's got that nice thin awning that sticks out from the building. I don't think it needs to be that substantial, but something more in that vocabulary would be what I'm looking for.
And that's a decorative awning on that side that is causing a lot of trouble on that side. It's like,
and make it better. I mean, have your architect and engineer look at it and make it better. It just, we're trying to help you get to a point where you fulfill your life safety needs, but that it does not compromise the aesthetics of your property. And I think that this applied box compromises the aesthetics.
Any other board comments? Okay. Thank you, Darren and Marcella.
Thank you.
Federico.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing the mock-up.
Thank you.
Marcella, touch base with me sometime this week, and we can talk about the permit status.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Pardon me. It's great that we're moving along so quickly. I had hoped that would be the case. The next item, if we have the applicant available, is just a quick update for DRB 20-0505. This is the 666 71st Street project, which is board reviewed at the last virtual design discussion meeting. I believe we will have the project architect, Mr. Robert Bistry, on board to have a brief presentation on how they took the feedback of both staff and this board and came up with a reworked design, which they will be back for action item next month for hopefully approval. One of the things that we had spoken about at the last time was that the program was going to be modified and that the applicant was going to be incorporating these co-living units. That's not for discussion today. That's just a little bit of an update that I've been working behind the scenes with the applicant to make sure that is okay and correctly noticed to the board. Some of the comments from this board were pertaining to this project, specifically the ground floor base of the parking levels, is that the angles were too harsh. There was kind of almost too much happening, a lot happening with the design. Based on the triangular, unique triangular site design, there seemed to be an overabundance of design. Some of the board members were not convinced of the residential component being flushed with the parking screen. Consider setting it back a bit or expanding, including balconies. And that the south building, if you recall, of this triangular block, there were two holdout parcels, one at the very tail end and one kind of mid-center on Indian Creek Drive. So the building actually wraps around that missing tooth on Indian Creek Drive. So some of the board members felt that south building, once it goes around the two-story building that is not part of the application, could be articulated independently or separately from the overall project. Staff is excited from what I've seen of the modification, and hopefully we'll be back for an action item next month.
Robert, thank you for joining us.
Great, thank you. Thank you, James. So if we could have the slides, I'll walk through what we've done. Okay, great. So as James mentioned, and I put on this very brief presentation of the changes, there were four kind of major comments that I took away from the last meeting. I think that probably the one that overlapped everything was, and if we can go to the next slide. My favorite slide that shows our triangular hole with the square peg kind of analogy. That the architecture was driven from the unique site itself. So the massing followed not only our site geometry, but then the required setbacks, habitable liners, and the like. If we can go to the next slide. The idea that we had, so I have the before and after. On the left side, it was not only the massing that then generated this triangular form, but we were experimenting with other design elements that were on the facade surfaces themselves that reinforced that angular massing. And I agree with what the board said. It was a little too much, a little too intense. So we tried to take a step back and calm the overall design without changing the entire form. Again, as I presented in the last hearing, the building massing almost designed itself for what we had to work with from the inside out, as well as the restrictions of setback and, you know, lot line. So in this case, we're showing the 71st Street elevation, where once upon a time we have the angles in the podium base that's fringe with the element. I'm not sure if you could see my cursor on that. I still did want to have design elements that tied the parking that are on levels 2 and 3 to the residential on levels 4 and 5, so that it wasn't just a layered move. But we straightened it out and we added Juliet balconies to each of those units. So there is some texture. We don't really have the real estate to set the building back too much. If we go to the next slide. So here's the perspective, the difference of what we had, the last hearing and where we are now. Again, the intent is the Juliet balconies are just a nice sliding door so that you could get fresh air in, but we can't project them to the point where somebody could step onto them, because then we would have to make them 5 feet deep to meet minimum fair housing requirement. So it's really just sort of a surface texture, a glass rail, a very clean glass rail with an aluminum cap that you would open the door, get fresh air, and it would put eyes on the street. So, the more activity that we could have with people, the residents themselves, seen and being seen from the street is the goal. We can go to the next slide. This is the Indian Creek Drive elevation, again, on the left, where we have the angular white precast panels. We still believe, and I think in general that the board was supportive and staff, that the strategy we have for the parking screening will be of a architectural white precast with perforations that do not allow visual sight lines in to see cars or lighting at night. But it's more of a solid type of approach versus a very porous look. What we've done now is we've also, these images show the added height of the ground level glazing, and I didn't point that out on the last image. That was one of staff's recommendations from the last review, the last report. So we're almost to the 24-foot line for our ground level glazing. Now what we've done by straightening out those precast panels, I think again, the effectiveness of the angular massing is still there, it's just a bit calmer. And then to take the comments about maybe since the south end of this podium is detached, how could we give it a bit of its own character? I looked at a number of different ways. The problem is we still want this to read as a plinth, even though it is intersected with the building that we could not get control of. So what I've done is I'm using the stairway, which is adjacent just south of that existing building, to act as a reveal. So we have glass guardrails at the intermediate balconies, and this open stairwell then created that separation. And then on the ground level, if we can go to the next image, it's a little more clear in the 3D. On the ground level, we would have an articulated wall, meaning that would be a precast wall with similar patterns that we have for the parking screening, but it would be opaque because that is the FPL vault emergency generator. And I think this is a perfect opportunity. There was some discussion about things like living wall, green, you know, green screen living wall. Down here, this would have an effect of like, I would call it a calming effect. On the intersection of 71st and Indian Creek Drive, it's a lot of energy. We have the retail, it's a busy intersection. But as we move to the south and the buildings, you know, we're into a smaller scale to the existing buildings. And so this green wall, which could be served from the ground level. So it's not like we have raised planters, it would be a maintenance issue. These vines and such, and I have not had the landscape architect detail this yet. I wanted to run it by and see if this was something that the board agreed with. But that treatment can wrap even to the south, where that's an interior lot line. You know, we're right at our lot line. But I think that that would sort of warm up the base of that building and then allow just the two-story simple screen to return. Next slide, please. And this is the Carlisle Avenue facade. Again, here, you can see the intensity of those angles that I had brought all the way down into the storefront. We've straightened those. We've added the glazing for the staff report. And I've also separated the precast. So the tower element, where you see the windows and the balconies that we have now on the main tower, the podium doesn't slide all the way into the vertical core, which is the darker gray. If we go to the next image, please. So again, here you see that difference. So we can go to the next slide, please. And then this is back at the intersection of Indian Creek Drive and 71st. Again, fundamentally, you know, most of the same treatments are there, but just in general, by changing those angles, I think it's achieved a little bit more of a sophisticated, less busyness with all the lines that we have. The last couple of slides are just to remind that we have submitted the full technical package. We've uploaded that to the city, and we are proposing that we do the co-living, so the program would have changed to 110. And hopefully that will be heard on the July board meeting. So
Thank you, Robert.
That's what I have as an update on this.
Thank you very much. Does anyone from the public wish to speak?
Mr. Galbit?
Mr. Galbit, his microphone is turned off. Oh, there you are. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much. I thought my screen was on and you can actually visually see me, maybe not. I just wanted to commend Robert.
We just lost you.
You may be on mute, Russell.
Yeah, there we go. I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you all for your time today. I was just congratulating Robert for listening to everybody's comments from the last meeting and responding directly to them. I think we made a much better design and a much more improved project. And we're looking forward. This is an interesting process. I'm sorry that they appeared on my screen as being a little bit foggy. I'm not sure why that happened. But they're as clear as a bell, and if you have a chance to look at the plans, they really are quite spectacular. So we're very, very excited that we were able to make these changes and make everybody happy and responsive to your comments before. We look forward to Jefferson. Actually, this is his first major project, and he's pretty excited. I'm here really helping him and mentoring him. But I'm proud of the project and the way this project is coming out. It is an important project. It's one that we've worked diligently with staff and with you and making the right changes at the right time. And I think it's going to be the linchpin of this entire area. So I'm really very, very pleased, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I think we've gotten a good way to go here, and we just need to get going. And hopefully we can get your approval at the next meeting next month.
Thank you very much. And thank you for coming back again, Robert. I see no one else who wishes to speak from the public, so I'm going to close the public portion and turn it over to our board for comment. Jason?
Sure. Thank you, James. Robert, thank you for putting in all this effort just in the last few weeks to get everything kind of addressed. I know how much work it can be to get all the 2D and 3D and all the renderings and everything. I think you've done it's a great improvement on where you started. I think it's definitely a stronger project. I would say when you come for your formal review, I'd love to see a little bit more detail about these, the architectural precast panels and the detailing of that, because there's so much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the green wall, I know it, you show in the rendering, but of course it involves, planters and dirt and irrigation and how it's going to grow and how it's going to be stuck to the building. Since you're kind of wrapping that one south building, on several sides, I think it's just really important that myself and the board understand how these kind of decorative and these live elements work. But I drive by there at least twice a day on my way to and from work to my house. So this corner, it deserves something really special, and I think. To me, it's kind of like the gateway to that, to the rest of it that's going to be beyond from there to Collins. So I'm really happy to see, and I hope you're you feel that it's better as well, because I know as an architect and as a designer, the board, sometimes our recommendations or our comments either resonate or don't. And the whole goal, of course, is to make the projects better. So we appreciate all the energy it takes to really process what we say and try to figure out what we mean by what we say. So
I agreed with those comments. I wasn't just reacting. It's better. There's a little too much going on, but that's a great process you go through, so that it's looked at from a number of different perspectives.
Thank you, Jason. And I want to say thank you to Mr. Yelvett, who allowed you to take these steps and make these changes. It's oftentimes hard. You feel like you're going backwards, but you really did go forward. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'd like to say also that it's a great improvement over what you had brought us last time in almost every area. One thing I'd like to see you look at a little bit more closely is that area on the north facade, that sort of intermediate piece above the retail and below the slab of the building.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's improved greatly. I don't know if that would read better if there was more of a horizontal emphasis in that piece. Right now it has a little bit more of a vertical emphasis, but it's almost sort of very checkerboardish. And especially on that corner, the northwest corner, maybe if you could lose that strong column at the corner and wrap that corner, with especially the glass,
that'd be
a lot nicer at that corner.
Yeah, I see. That was that way prior, with the glass wrapped, and we put the on the end. That's a good point. I think it's just the rendering.
Yeah, but you might have that whole area read more horizontal, between the glass part and the perforated part.
I could try that. Again, the goal was to try to create one picture window, and that's why I've been looking at elements that tie the parking to the residential. So it's not just a clear strata, strata or park residents. It's such a strong horizontal with this frame, maybe there is a way to do it. So, I'm glad to study that, and maybe.
Yeah, just look at it.
If it's an acceptable process, that we have a couple of options the next board meeting, and we could say we tried it and it worked or it didn't.
That's fine. The other area that I thought could use a little more look is on the east side. Where you brought the the sort of massing of the building down and you separated it from the horizontal parking garage. Mm-hmm. You have the those sort of punched windows in that area. It might be interesting if you continue those punches down as blind punches so yeah. that reads more vertically because it sort of stops right there.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
But other than that, I think it's a great improvement.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I see that is sort of just a blank portion there. We should be able to carry that texture to.
You got that?
Yeah, I remember saying that.
Okay. Any other board comments?
I would just like to know quickly. I like the idea of the green screen being applied, but the one rendering, I don't know what sheet that is. It's the kind of axon looking to the northeast. It does not show the street trees along the south parcel and or the south peak. Is that just an oversight?
No, I had the render removed though so that you could see the green screen.
Got it. Okay.
And I think for the next month, you know, if it makes sense, I'll have our landscape architect there to answer any other more detailed questions. We'll definitely develop that further. But, you know, sometimes if you do the rendering accurate like that, then you can't see the building behind it. So that's why I did that.
No, understood and appreciated. Thank you.
And thank you, Robert. And going forward, I would not recommend anyone to ever bring this board options to pick from for fear that we would be... We'd come up with 10 more, you know. So come with your best shot.
All right.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Great, thanks, guys.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Russell. Have a great day.
Thank you all very, very much. Thank you.
Okay, we'll be keying up the next presentation. This is the final discussion item of the day, and it encompasses a few of the active applications that we have going. It's DRB files number 19-0499-0500-0501 and -0502 and finally 0524. These are the citywide distributed antenna systems, the DAS nodes. We'll be having Edward Martos and Richard Heisenbottle be presenting. Unbeknownst to the virtual meetings that we'd be having, the applicant's attorney, Mr. Martos, had actually earlier suggested that, or asked if I recommended that he make a presentation to the board about the distributed antenna systems for the benefit of the newer board members. For staff and for other board members, you know that we see these almost in bulk. Basically, we've seen to date three typologies of these distributed antenna systems that come before the board in our city right-of-ways. One is the stealth design, which is just the slender wand with no armature. The second is the integrated stealth pole with the integrated Cobra head lighting. We refer this as the one-to-one replacement and is by and large the optimal solution because it results in a zero net increase of clutter or street furniture. And then finally, we've seen a typology that involves capitalizing on existing other utility infrastructure such as FPL poles and putting the radio portions of the what is typically encased in the pole onto this utility structure. But then the drawback of that is there is another freestanding meter and element that is to the side of the poles because of limitations that utility company allows onto their poles. For the presentations that are before you today, I believe we have two of the typologies, the integrated DOS pole with the Cobra head lighting and then the freestanding pole. Yes, so we just have the two typologies today for the board. Staff, by and large, is supportive of the application. applications. It does recommend slight relocation of two of them. And then for disclosure, I did send both the applicant and the board members a letter of objection to one of the applications today by the Apogee Condominium Association. But again, to reiterate that there are no action item taken on these, this is just for discussion purposes.
Thank you, James. Edward?
James, thank you very much for that introduction, and board members, thank you for this opportunity. I'm joined for the record. My name's Edward Martos. Offices are at 2525 Ponce de Leon Boulevard. I'm joined today by our architect, Richard Heisenbottle, who will be leading in the presentation, the majority of the ending part of the presentation. I just wanted to take a few minutes, as James mentioned, to introduce myself. For the new board members, the old board members can tell you that I'll be attending pretty often, probably at just about every meeting. We had a little bit of a slowdown after a bunch of applications were in, but now we'll be appearing before you more frequently. Of course, we are aware that this isn't the first telecom application that you've received for those new board members who are here, but we at Crown Castle pride ourselves on having helped develop this program with the city of Miami Beach. We've been working on this for years, and we actually designed the sort of stealth poll that some other applicants are now copying and presenting as an option here. We designed that, I should say, with in collaboration with city staff, and we're very grateful to them for that. Just as a quick overview, if you'll start the presentation, please, the PowerPoint. Pierre? Perfect. Thank you. The first slide that you see in our presentation is a map. It's actually out of date at this point because many of these sites have been approved. The map shows various nodes, right? These stealth poles that we're going to be talking about. And you can see how they're distributed almost as a grid, throughout the city of Miami Beach. Some of them for our HPB poles, others DRB, and we've also identified those that are approved. Probably half of those blue and red ones that you see on this list have already been approved. And the reason I show you this is because this really highlights what we're trying to accomplish here. As we progress and as everyone has more and more devices, and it's important to say that it's about devices and not necessarily people. As we have more and more devices, we have a greater need for both coverage, which is the area that is covered by our grid, and also capacity, which is the amount of information that can travel through the grid. As you all know, historically, a lot of telecom communications pass through major towers, big lattice structures that simply don't fit in Miami Beach. And as 5G technology comes along, that option becomes less and less viable for a variety of technical reasons we don't need to get into. And so what we're providing here is really a way that Miami Beach can move into the future for telecommunications and keep up with the rest of the world, frankly, without seeing tremendous structures like these large lattice structures introduced. The next slide, please. And since I'm not sure how familiar you may be from other applications with the sort of design that we created, but essentially what we managed to do here was take both the antenna that traditionally would be attached to a pole, like a FPL pole, for example, and would look very clunky. We took that. And we also took the cabinet that you might be familiar with. At some other cities, they allow very large cabinets to take up parts of the right-of-way. We took all of that equipment and we shrank it, miniaturized it, and squeezed it into this pole design. And we allowed for some finishing. And it's quite impressive when you really look into all the technology that has to squeeze into this pole. This pole design allows for, I believe, up to five, I'm counting, five different carriers to attach to the same location, which is to say, rather than have five poles on the same block, this gives us the opportunity to have all the different carriers in one location. If you go to the next slide. you'll see more of the same, some of the technology. I want to highlight something because this is a key point that will come up. It's not going to come up today, but it's going to come up in the future. We have a power meter. Every one of these poles tracks its own power. And occasionally, in certain circumstances, we found it necessary and I think, frankly, ideal to attach to an existing FPL pole. Circumstances where that might arise are in residential neighborhoods, for example, where they don't have tall Cobra lights as it is, but they have FPL poles running through. Rather than add a new pole, albeit a nice sleek one, we think in those cases it's sometimes beneficial to add an antenna to the FPL pole. Issue being, and I bring this up now, the power meter is not allowed to be attached to the FPL pole. And so this power meter on this slide here at the top left corner, you'll see called out that power meter. On occasion, we will have to, in those circumstances, we will propose putting those meters separate and apart from the pole. Fortunately, we don't have any of those applications today. And I say fortunately only because in the past, it's not been the will of the board to go in that direction. Next slide, please. And here we'll just zoom by here. I understand, Chairman, that you suggested not giving you options, but I'm putting my foot in my mouth by saying you have a lot of options in terms of finishing. This color palette is not the end all be all, but it just gives you some ideas, some options as we move forward. And with that, I really want to go into the applications because I can really highlight all the issues and considerations by simply going through these sites. So thank you for indulging me on that big overview. The first location is on 960 West Avenue. And Richard, why don't you take it from here?
Okay, can we confirm that my audio is working just fine?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. Thank you, everyone. And for those of you that perhaps don't know me or don't know what our role, the role of RJ Husband Architects has been, we have been working with Crown Castle on the sensitive placement and even sensitive design of their towers since the onset of their coming to Miami Beach. And so we've been the guys that have helped them make the best possible decisions while locating these in locations that provide their grid with the most service, especially in the historic districts, but also in the rest of the city. So our job is to be as sensitive as possible in where each of these gets placed. So let's turn to the first one for today. Bring that slide up on the screen. It would be helpful. That is DRB 190499, 960 West Avenue. There we go. I'll go to the next slide also. There we are. I think everybody kind of may recognize the general location of this and what we're in front of. This is what we call a direct replacement scenario, where we do not add any street furniture to the street. We have a street light there now that is owned by the City of Miami Beach, and we will directly replace that street light. Are we on the next slide?
Next slide, please.
Go to the next one, yes. We'll be directly replacing that street light with one of our poles that holds a City of Miami Beach street light. So probably the next slide is the better one to illustrate how this is for the new board members who are not seeing 100 of these already. So we effectively attach a light to the DOS node pole, and thereby minimize any additional impact to the neighborhood and to the streetscape by doing so. That should be a pretty easy one for everyone. We always get lots of support for that for those. Let's move on to the next one right now. DRB 190500 at 1337 15th Street. Go to the next slide. Thank you. And once again, I think folks may recognize the area in the neighborhood as to where this is. This is a mid-block position. Go ahead and flip to the next slide. Thank you very much. This as well is one of those direct replacements where we're taking out an existing street light that you see on the left side of this photograph, and we're replacing it with the DOS node that has a street light attached to it. Go to the next slide. It'll also show it a little bit better. The existing condition on the left and the new condition with the DOS node at the very top of the pole on the right. So that should also be a situation with no controversy. That's about as nice as we can do these sorts of things. So we'll move to the next DRB item 19-0501. Thank you. This is a what we call a standalone situation. Go ahead and go to the site plan. This is on 52 First Street, right near the beach. And let's go ahead and look at this location in elevation on the next slide. This is a pole that does not have a light. This is being located in the landscape area on city right of way, adjacent to a parking lot. Another view of this that might be better is for everyone is the next slide, especially the one on the right hand side, which is a photo simulation of where this will go. So we'll sit in with the hedges on the backside of the sidewalk, not obstructing anything, and yet providing good coverage for the network in that location. And from there, let's move to the next item, DRB 19-0502. This is 5678 Collins Avenue. And we have, for those new board members who have not heard the story of FDOT before, this is an FDOT standalone fixture. And we go to the next slide and you'll begin to get a better picture. Because we are on Collins Avenue, 5678 Collins Avenue to be exact, Collins Avenue is an FDOT road. So we do not have some of the cooperation that we get from Sydney Miami Beach in locating these. In this particular case, in between the two condominium buildings that we see in the next photograph, or that we see in this photograph, but go to the next photograph. We see that we've located this as a standalone pole at the back of the sidewalk in between the two buildings. And we can go to the next slide and get a better feel for what that is.
Now, Richard, if I may, at this point, I'd like to highlight and sort of explain a little bit more as to explain a little better something that Richard alluded to, which is the FDOT situation. Florida law gives utility companies such as Crown Castle broad authority to enter into the public rights of way. And that is true in just about every right of way but for FDOT rights of way. And FDOT rights of way, we have to abide by FDOT requirements. And if any board members have ever experienced putting in an application with FDOT, you will know that it is extremely difficult to get them to budge on anything. We have been working now with FDOT for several years on a compromise position, a logical one, we think, and we continue to work towards that end. That position would be to swap those large Cobra lights. I mean, it's apparent as soon as you saw this slide, there's a lot of Cobra lights there. FDOT, for whatever reason, is taking the position that they want their Cobra lights on their own and they don't want to cooperate or collaborate with respect to these sort of swaps. So while we continue to work to get FDOT to the table and resolve this sort of impasse, we have, you know, the needs of the city, the needs of our residents and also our visitors don't stop. You know, we continue to need telecommunication services. So we've continued to apply for these and request their approval wherever possible. When, you know, if there's a cross street, for example, and that cross street moving east west is city managed, we will try to locate within the city right of way rather than the FDOT right of way. In large stretches like the one here that you see on Collins, there is no cross street. And so we respectfully ask that you please approve this sort of condition. And one other thing that we often try to do, which is if there is some other structure in the area that we can move to, we can remove in order to have a no net increase in street furniture, we do that as well. In this instance, in this area where the node has to be located for radio frequency purposes, we don't see those options. Richard?
Okay, I mean, and the long and short of what Ed just said is that well, normally we would swap out the pole, our new pole, with the Cobra Head pole behind us. FDOT will not allow us to do so, so we have to put the standalone pole. So let's move to the next item, which is 2 Washington Avenue. This is also a standalone pole situation. This is DRB 20-0524. At 2 Washington Avenue, again, a location that I think we all will recognize and know. There we go. Go to the site plan. Thank you very much. The aerial view. And we have this on the west side of the street. And okay, let's go. Let's go ahead and look to the next slide now. This is a standalone pole that we're proposing in this location.
And Richard, if I may interrupt here, this application, we were ready to present this today, and this morning, I think at about I want to say like 7 a.m. or so, James notified me of the email communication he received. I think all of you had that same email communication. Well, shortly thereafter, I was able to get a hold of the Apogee's, which is a neighboring building there, as you see it there in the background. The Apogee's attorney, I got a hold of him. We had a brief conversation. I understand what his client's concerns are. I would like to put this one on the table rather than spending more time discussing it, because it's very clear to me that they feel strongly about this location and we want to examine whether we can accommodate them in any way. Frankly, our engineers have already explained to us for a variety of reasons that this is the location where we need to place the pole in order to properly serve the community and complete the grid. I don't know that what kind of accommodation we're going to be able to make, but I want to sit with him and hear him out, understand what the situation is, and present this application to you next week, or not next week, but next month when we have a better idea. So respectfully, I'll ask that we table this one for now and come back to it next month.
Thank you, Edward.
There we go. That finishes our presentation for today.
Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else from the public wish to speak? I see no one, so I'm going to close the public portion of the hearing and turn over the board for comment. So why don't we start with the first one, of course, and if you could bring up those slides again.
Oh, Let's go up to, keep going through this group of slides and get to the DRB 190499. And we should probably go into that a little bit further. Let's go to the next one. There we go.
Any comments, board?
Staff is supportive of this location and incorporation of the Cobra Head as proposed.
Thank you, James.
Can I ask a quick question about the height, the overall height of the existing to the new? This is Jason Hagopian.
Yes, Jason.
Yeah, I was just curious, obviously it looks like the photos are to scale. So what's the difference in the height? I guess the light's at a different height, obviously, because it's a different kind of light, and the pole itself is taller, correct?
That's correct. The pole is about, depending, because we do have different poles, but the pole is 38 foot 6 inches to the top.
Okay, and then the existing pole that's on the left?
I have not a clue what that is, because it's an existing city pole. Okay. But the light mounts, in round numbers, the light mounts at about 20 feet. No, it's 20, just a little above 20, 20 feet. So,
and the question really is the light being located at the same location the current light is? It appears to be lower on the new pole.
It may be lower on the new pole. That's correct. There's, because of the pole's own limitations, so we have to get all of this equipment in there. There's really one location.
Something was said just now about these drawings that they were to scale, and I don't know that they are to a precise scale.
I don't think they are to scale.
No. I just mean the photo. It looks like both the photos are the same. It's exact same photo. You know,
yes.
Like, that's what I mean. Not like you zoomed in more to the other.
No. It's the same photo. Yeah.
Now, if you look at the light location on the new pole, it's not in the same location if you compare it to the fronds of the trees.
Right.
It's significantly lower, in fact. Now, I wonder who reviews the location of these light fixtures vertically?
There are technical reasons.
In your packages, we actually identify where the light fixture is going to be. We have a specification sheet as part of each one of your packages. And I'll just.
So, but Edward, the point I was trying to make is that we're not technically educated enough to understand proper optics of these lights for street functions, you know, both the walker and the driver. So I'm sure there's somebody who's in the Department of Transportation or somebody who looks at this and knows what's the correct answer. We shouldn't be determining something that's not correct.
These are all reviewed and approved and ultimately permitted through the Department of Public Works at the city.
Okay.
Yeah, I would assume it's a better, you know, it's a different light. I'm sure it's an LED light that it's better that it's actually lower. There's less spillage, less light pollution. So I'm always happy to see the lights lower than higher. So I'll assume all that's been engineered and foot candles have been looked at and all of that and stuff.
All of the foot candles and engineering in terms of calibration for the lights does happen at permitting. Between our engineers and Public Works, we always work that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other comments from the board on this location, this solution? I see none. So we want to move on to the next one.
Yes, this is 19050 15th Street.
One-to-one replacement again.
That's correct, a direct replacement. The best slide to go to is the one that shows the profile of the new pole and the existing pole. That's it, you've got it up there, thank you.
Can you ask them?
Any comments, board? Okay, move on to the next one.
190501, the standalone near the beach.
What the city requires?
Now, there is no light on this one. This is strictly the DOS node set in what we believe to be the best possible location. We can go to the next photo. What I like is that it's completely out of the public walkway.
Mm-hmm.
There it is.
Board members, staff does have a concern with this location. It may be out of the public walkway, but it's in the public vista of the terminus to the beaches. Staff recommends that the applicant explore relocating the pole into the city-owned parking lot south, which is I'm going to date myself by calling it Penrod's, the surface parking lot south of the proposed location.
That would be the parking lot they just restored?
That's correct. I forwarded their architect team a plan, approved plans. This board approved the modifications to the parking lot, and it's in for permit. So for them to be able to coordinate the location, that would not obstruct any of the proposed parking spaces, as well as not block any visibility. So I did supply that and reached out to the applicant's representative as well to voice that staff believes that there's a more optimal location.
Well, and let me just say that, James, we do appreciate your efforts. They're thoughtful and we're thankful for them. However, our preference is to remain in the public right-of-way. Florida law does give us that right as a utility to access the rights-of-way. It's why we're here. And the change to going into private property, even if it's owned by the city of Miami Beach, it is private property, is not something that we're willing to explore right now. As board members know, we are always open to alternatives. At this time, we do think that this is the ideal spot, given that it's completely out of the pedestrian path.
It also puts the pole in a location that is that allows the signal to get to the beach area, which is what the intent of this node is really for.
Correct.
Do you have a site plan for this location?
We do. It's part of your package. If you actually scroll through the presentation,
you have three. Here,
if you would.
It's at the very end of the package.
Yeah.
You should see a proposed site plan dated February 10th, 2020. It shows the entire kind of general area around it. It's a good aerial view at the same time as a survey with dimensions all over it. Shows the property line, shows the right of way, and it shows in red how we're locate this in between the hedges over there.
Board members, maybe I wasn't quite as articulate as I thought. Staff wasn't recommending placing the pole in the middle of the parking lot, but rather the survey that I sent to the architect's team, I believe that the proposed right-of-way is not, they have some room to the south prior to the property becoming GU as part of the city lot. In this instance, as opposed to other instances, the right-of-way, I believe, is wider than they have. And so they have additional room in the right-of-way that is located south that happens to be part of the parking lot. But it still would be installing it in the right-of-way.
So to clarify, James, I'm looking at the plan survey, and there's approximately 6 feet, 5 feet to the property line of the right of way.
Correct.
And part of why we submitted this plan, part of our concern in this, is not just the issue of being on private property. This photo that you have in front of you actually highlights exactly what goes on in the parking lot, which is that even though the right-of-way line there exists, cars use the entire, every surface of that lot.
And I think that lot, Edward, is being designed differently now. And I think James is right. He should be coordinating with the new design. This is an old photograph.
Understood.
Yeah.
So let's try to take a look at that.
Well, look, between this meeting and the next, since we're not having to vote today, we're absolutely happy to look at the option. We just had some reservations because, you know, in addition to not controlling what happens on that property, the rights of way, true rights of way, I realize that this is technically part of a rights of way, true rights of way tend not to be redeveloped or have new construction on them. There tends not to be movement of cars, you know, over a sidewalk the same way that there would be in a parking lot. So we just felt that this was, you know, inches away, you know, maybe a couple feet away from James's proposed location, but provided a little more security for us. We're not talking about
Edward, I appreciate that. I don't think we'll ask you to put it inside the parking lot, parking area. We're just trying to give you advice, and I think that's why you're here today.
Give you
ideas that we have. So we would love to get approved next week or next time you come.
And what I'm saying to you, Mr. Chair, is that we are going to look at it. I'm not arguing with that point. I'm just explaining, you know, where our mindset was.
Ed, I think even a 1 foot offset would be beneficial to not blocking that vista and still maintain your pole being free from vehicular conflict.
Understood. And look, I tend to see what you're saying. I'm not completely dismissing what you're saying at all. We just had those concerns, so we'll look into it, and you know, hopefully next month we have a solution everyone likes.
James, would you be so kind as to send us the proposed site plan for the parking lot, the new one that has just been approved?
Yes,
everything.
Richard,
you know,
Richard, I do believe that I sent it a while back to your colleague.
Maria's across the conference table from me, and she's going to look for it again. But just anyway, doesn't seem to mind.
No problem.
Anyway, all right.
I'd be more than happy to.
Please. All right. Well.
Any other comments, board?
No, I agree with that, and I look forward to seeing their alternative solution.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marsh. Okay, Richard, are we okay?
Oh, we are okay. We're back to Collins Avenue now, 5678 Collins. Go to the next slide, please. 1905. That, as we explained, is the DOT right of way. I think the two important things here is this is not located on top of either one of the buildings. It's in the middle. It's consistent with all the other poles on the street. And there's really not much to say to FDOT that we have not already said. So,
So Mr. Chair, we don't see a lot of these poles that are along Collins because the predominant portion of Collins Avenue falls within one of our local historic districts. So my colleague, Ms. Tackett, has worked with these applicants more in terms of when they fall on the on Collins Avenue and the conflict there and with FDOT. So we typically just have a fairly standard condition that we put in that the applicant explore reaching out to FDOT to do the one-for-one replacement. But the proposed location, the freestanding pole, does not interfere with any of the architecture and does not interfere with the pedestrian maneuverability on Collins Avenue west side sidewalk.
Thank you. Any comments? Okay.
And the last one is the one that we decided that we will postpone so that we can talk with the Apogee's legal counsel about their concerns.
Okay. And also, Richard, be cognizant of staff's concerns as well. on that location.
James, and this is strictly coming from Rich, we have this pole across the street that is in the city right away that somehow belongs to the city, but nobody within the city can tell us, who owns it. I mean, some have pointed to the police department and they go, nah, we don't own it. I mean, we would gladly swap that out, but which may be everyone happier, but let's
go. Okay, I'm going to have my colleague forward your information to our public works department to get an answer on that.
We will we'll explore that, but I'd really like to sit with the Apogee, Richard, and work out their concerns as well before we go too far.
So
members, thank you very much for your input and for this time. We really do appreciate it.
Oh, Edward, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, Edward.
Thank you,
and
Edward.
Richard. Thank you.
Be safe. Edward. Thank you all.
Marsh.
Edward, how are you the only individual in these challenging times that has less hair than more hair?
I keep it in the back now, man. It's all parting in the back. No, this is a three-month haircut. So.
I've been trying to look like Marsh,
getting there.
Thanks, okay, everybody.
All right, folks.
All right, be safe.
Thank you.
Perfect.
So, James? Hey,
yes, thank you guys so much for participating. Just a little bit of some numbers for you. So July 7th, we'll have a total of 33 applications. I believe we will be getting four of them to be officially withdrawn for various reasons. In the May Design Review Board discussion meeting, we presented four fairly large projects, those TCCs. One of them, I think, probably the board would agree, has moved a step closer towards getting its approval, probably quickly, at the next hearing. In addition, we've presented 9 applications today. So if we add the 4 with the 9 with the 4 potential withdrawals, we come down to 16 items, which if we move on the ones that we've already presented fairly quickly, I know 2 of the TCCs may be a little bit more complicated than the other 2 without naming case files. We're still going to be left with quite a lengthy application. I've tried to review ones for simplicity, and by and large, a lot of the single family homes that haven't been presented, with the exception of the Nadlers, are quote unquote more complicated, meaning they require at least a waiver or in some cases variances or more than one waiver. But I have faith in this board that we'll be able to move swiftly and get through at least half of the items I'm hoping for. We previously had August recess, which we will now be having an August meeting. I don't believe we're going to receive a lot of applications for August, so hopefully we'll be able to be back on track by come September calendar time.
James, will the next agenda be time certain the way these have been?
We could.
Be able to measure our progress or lack of?
We could do that for sure.
And as we get behind, people will know that we're behind.
Right. And do we still have 5 board members present? 6? Oh, great. Is it fair to say that 5 p.m. would be the cutoff as typical?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great. And then I wanted to reach out with the board members here. I know Mr. Bodner reached out to me independent about the move from the paper drawings to your reviewing it through electronics, through the Nova system. I know that they may be in conflict by being able to look at plans on the same device that you are participating with the Zoom. Conversely, I know that Jason and Scott reached out earlier prior to this situation and requested not receiving the board packages because of the waste of the paper and that they were more comfortable working at their home computer. So I just wanted to gauge on that from this board. If you
want to share with you my conversation with James that I had earlier, I believe last week, I had recommended that it's, unless you have an adequate amount of monitors in front of you, it's hard to go back and forth looking at drawings digitally and to keep your eye on the screen. The trick is that I totally agree that we don't need to receive the entire package of transportation and all the backup paperwork for this middle. I think I told James there are probably about 15 or 20 pages, like we saw today in our presentations. It pretty well summarizes all the issues that we're going to want to look at. There may be one or two sections you'd want to include or one or two other, but that would be kind of a case-by-case basis. So I'd recommended to try one kind of hybrid, which is that we would receive a very reduced size paper package, much, much smaller than before, if you want it. In other words, it'll be a person-by-person thing. I personally would want it only because I'm working off an iPad. And if someone doesn't want it, even that much of it, that would be fine. Everything will still be, the entire submission will still be online for you to access as a public record. So even if your small package doesn't give you enough information, you feel you can always go to that to look deeper down the rabbit hole, so to speak. What are your thoughts, board?
I would prefer to move to a digital format if possible.
Okay.
I like the small package idea.
I'm not opposed to the small package, especially I think if we get back to more of the normal hearings where we're all together, then the small package would be ideal because I can't see, you know, right now I've got two screens, but I wouldn't be able to see what was going on in the audience if we were all live. So the small package would work.
Yeah, me. I don't need the small package now, as long as we're doing this, because I have two screens here also. So
okay.
Yeah, me too.
It's fine right now, but once we are physically together again, I think the small package is a good idea.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. Well, okay. I'll relay that information to our staff, also, you know, with the other land use boards. I know that it was very challenging for the four TCC projects to review because of how hefty the drawings were, you know, versus just say the one story bank where there's only 10 sheets that you need to successfully review it. And maybe a lot of the technical diagrams that you depend upon staff analysis aren't necessary. But I'll be able to get back with you in July on what we've come. I just wanted the board to gauge their opinion on receiving it or not.
So to that end, Nick, are we legally required to have all of the documentation in our possession, i.e., the traffic studies and those types of things as well?
You mean on paper or?
On paper, it's all.
No, I don't think you need to have them on paper. You need to have the plans and in your possession and the staff reports in your possession. But no, I don't see any requirement that they be on paper.
Yeah, I would still like to have access to the entire package digitally.
And you will. I think you will. That's without question.
We're obligated to have all the access when we're in a live meeting. You know, I personally have my laptop and I am comfortable. I've had all my notes on my staff reports. I have my notes on my drawings all digitally, and I have that on my. I only need one screen when I'm in the live meeting because everybody is there, and then you're presenting on the screen. So here in the office, I have three screens, so that's really easy too. So. I'm just, you know, I'm sure many of the other folks, if you're submitting for RFPs and things like that, you're seeing everything is going to a digital all the cities and counties are all going digital. The printing, I'd be surprised if you're still printing out packages, you know, a year from now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we agree. I just know that, you know, because of the situation with the canceled meetings and then the potential closing of, you know, public buildings because of the situation, that we were not accepting deliveries for the paper copies. And then we went with the Zoom meeting. It was a lot to put on this board. And that's why I felt that at this time, while we're potentially moving towards the hybrid next month, it would be something that would be discussed. But if everyone is comfortable enough with the digital, then that's great.
Let's try it.
Okay.
Let's try it.
James, our meeting in July, that's electronic, not physical.
Nick, is Nick here? So we are having a hybrid meeting where the board members and staff will be working and meeting remotely as we are now. And we've set up a physical location for members of the public to come and present.
Right,
Mr. Stephens, I went over that this morning, and you had yet to join. I apologize for not repeating that. So again, Nick, maybe you want to expand on that?
Yeah, thank you, James. So what we've done in order to continue to comply with the social distancing guidelines that are in place, but also permit applicants the opportunity to have their applications heard and decided on, is we've come up with a hybrid format where the board meeting will still take place virtually, with board members and staff appearing by Zoom, and applicants and members of the public as well. But we're providing an additional opportunity for members of the public and even applicants who don't have access to a computer to be able to come to a physical location and either present their applications, or if they're a member of the public, present their evidence and any testimony they'd like to include. So we've determined that it's sort of the best we can do under the circumstances, but that it would meet the standards of due process that are required for these hearings to be able to have applicants and members of the public appear in person.
And so then we would be voting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Moving forward, all the applicants will be filling out and signing a form approved by the city attorney's office and the planning department, and basically a hold harmless for this participation in this hybrid meeting. Correct, Nick?
Yes. Okay. Think of it as a Zoom booth, where somebody who didn't have access to Zoom will have a place to appear, right?
We just coined a room for Zoom.
Oh, I like that more, actually.
No, I like Zoom booth.
Zoom booth. Anyway, so again, thank you all very much.
Scott, I want to know what you're doing. You've been in that car for about 3.5 hours. Scott?
He's sleeping right now.
just a photograph of Scott.
Nope, he's not driving.
No, he's not driving. I can confirm that.
He's in a self-driving car.
Anyway, thank you, everybody.
Anyway, yeah. Nice to see everybody.
Yep. Stay well.
Anyway, thank
Good
you all
see you
again.
All. Take care.
We will likely be reverting to our 8:30 scheduled time, but I'll let you know that as we approach that date.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, James. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, staff.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Marge. Thank you all. Thank you, staff. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you, Tanya. Thank you, JP in communications.